Hello and welcome to a new episode of Forward Talk. Today it's all about scenarios in performance management. What is scenario modeling? What are the benefits for companies? And how should it be used and implemented in organizations? Could many companies have foreseen the consequences for their business in the corona crisis with scenario modeling? And how can we leverage scenario modeling and combine it with new technologies like generative AI to bring performance management to the next level? Andreas Seifert, Horvath Consultant in Performance Management, and Jolt Moravcik, co-founder and partner at Knowledge Seed, will now talk about what the modern crystal ball can really do, what challenge it faces, and where it's already being used. Enjoy listening.
Hi all, my name is Andreas and I'm very excited to be part of the podcast today, for which we have a very thrilling topic, scenario-based steering. That is including thinking and calculating scenarios into my business steering processes to be more flexible and more conscious. In essence, it's about asking the question, what if, in a regular manner, and being able to quickly give convincing answers to that. And to discuss the topic, I have a very knowledgeable guest here, Jolt.
Hello, also from my side. It's an honor to be here and let's start it.
Yes, regular listeners of this podcast will notice that we usually bring guests with a strong functional business background into the talk. And with you, Jolt, I have a technical expert to talk to. This is because we really want to make it tangible for the users to also dive a bit into the how of scenario modeling. Now, let's dive in. Let's look at normal company steering annual wheel process. They typically do once per year, usually at the beginning of the year, a strategy process, then a MTP, a midterm plan follows, usually a five-year outlook, 3 to 5 years into the future, how they think the world will look like then. And then the first year changes into a more granular version, which they call the budget, which is kind of their target for the next year. And once the company enters this next year, they usually have a forecasting process, mostly four times a year, mostly with a year end, sometimes also with a rolling focus. So they look always 12 months ahead and instead of only, let's say, to December. And that's what we see. And Joel, now let me ask you, does that sound familiar to you? And what weaknesses do you actually see in that process?
Yes, that's what I see, mostly when we start a project somewhere. And I would say a lack of flexibility for our phosphate world, which I would bring up like the weakest point of this. Traditional planning methods usually long and rigid processes and usually has one purpose to do. And that's, I think, not really fit for our fast-pacing world.
Exactly. That's also what I would mention. It's the lack of flexibility because we observe constant change in the world. We just think about what's happening now. We have changing interest rates that went up a lot in the last year. We have a war in Europe, unfortunately. We have a lot of repatriation thoughts of supply chains. And now recently we saw the political situation in the Middle East worsen. So that obviously doesn't fit a very rigid way of imagining the future. And Jolt, now you're saying that scenario-based steering is a way to bridge the two worlds. Can you explain that a bit?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's more a mindset and a cultural thing and not just tools or technologies together. I would use an example for, do you know Lego, am I right?
Of course.
Yeah, so when you get a Lego and you take out the manual and build, for example, a house with it, that's, in my head, the traditional planning. When you have a fixed process, you will know what usually we'll get at the end. And it has one single purpose, to teach you how to use different parts and what's the base of the Legoing. But when you have a big box of Lego and you sit together with your friends and you build a house, what you just imagine together, that's in my head the scenario modeling. When you know which piece fit to where, but you have your freedom and flexibility to adapt to your ideas and react to each other.
That's actually a very nice analogy for the Lego here, having the house and kind of taking away parts or putting parts on top. And I think that's exactly the kind of thinking we will go into a bit later that you also need in scenario modeling. Now, let's get away from Lego into a real example. Do you have anything to make that more tangible in a business world?
Yeah, like the first which came into my mind, it's one of our pharmaceutical clients in Switzerland. And they started quite small first in what department, which was the research and development department within the company. And you know, pharmaceutical research and development has a really long horizon. So they have a constant competing ideas like what kind of project should be start, discontinue or restart maybe if the world is changed. So for that, they imagined to have a scenario modeling tool where they can the different project manager can came up with different scenarios of a project, planning not just financial figures like IRR, cash flows, etc., but also like non-tangible descriptions and value propositions. And then they just hand in these different scenarios, and the scenario modeling tool enabled the portfolio managers to mix their portfolio as it fit for the current purpose of the company.
Wow, that's interesting that actually in a traditional large company, such planning processes are enabled with scenario modeling. You know how they actually did that? How did they make the change towards such an approach to planning the R&D portfolio?
Yeah, I think their practice became our best practice as well. So we learned from them as well how to suggest to other clients to start with scenario modeling. So they start in small, as I mentioned, one department. The team was really dedicated. The subject matter expert has a really good process based from traditional planning, how they did it. And they know what's lack of it and what they want to improve with the scenario modeling steering. And then we had really fast-paced iteration during the project. So we had really quick prototypes and really strong feedback loop how to improve. And then when it was ready, apart, they immediately start using and propagate the results. So immediately when we had some results, they show around within the company. And now they have like more than 15 different scenario small apps in the within the enterprise.
Wow. That's really impressive. And that's probably one thing to note, the best practice of really trying to be fast and get results quickly so you can use the results to encourage more people to participate and actually show the value. I think that's very, very important. Now we've looked at an example from, let's say, a more traditional setup, right? Let's move into something more extreme. Let's think back to Corona. Right. When we remember Corona, what did we observe in a lot of companies? We saw a strong focus on liquidity. Right. In some industries, we saw high pressure on finance departments to suddenly give answers in an unprecedented speed and direction across all the board. So, Jolt, what do you think? If you had a scenario modeling in that situation, how could that have helped you during Corona times?
Okay, so first of all, I think it's not a magic ball. So I want to a little bit broke down the dreams of people like it will help solve these issues. I would say scenario modeling is a tool to let you quickly iterate and rethink the different ideas, what you have raised in you based on the change of the outer world. So what does it mean? In Corona time, if you have a traditional planning process, which take just your example, 3-4 months, that's not enough. 3-4 months, you can lose half of your revenue stream in one area. So with the scenario modeling tool, you can quickly draft plans and go deeper with the most probable one and work out that. But what do you think? Could scenario modeling have had diminished the negative impact of Corona?
Well, I think diminish the negative impact is, of course, very strong to put it out like that. And it depends how you interpret it. But in general, I think it could have at least mitigated a lot. Because obviously nobody could have anticipated the political decisions that anybody would take or how the pandemic would develop. But being able to answer a question like what happens to my cash balance if I lose 80% of my sales in a region, that would have helped a lot of people if they could have gotten that out really quickly instead of having to calculate night through in an Excel spreadsheet. I think that's one thing. And another thing, I just recently attended actually a webcast about generative AI, which is the new hot topic right now in the moment, and what that can actually do in business steering. And I thought it's really interesting to then think about the combination of generative AI with scenario modeling, because the example they are shown that was shown was a business radar, and that radar enabled people to just look out in the world and get the news on certain topics, which were then rated like this is a negative connotation, positive connotation. And then you could click on a region and you would actually see the press articles that were out there. And you could then click on the article and it would open up. So imagine you had that tool already during Corona times. You yourself would have a strong presence in China and you would have actually seen the news on Corona in China already. And you could have incorporated that in your scenarios when it was not yet in Europe. Maybe some managers would have actually had prudence and had the idea that something would have been coming up and they could have already anticipated that. That, I think, is now in hindsight easy to say. I think that is kind of next level performance management if I'm actually able to combine tools in that way to move my business along. What do you think, Jolt, to that question?
I think what you just mentioned is really good because that's what I think also difference compared to the traditional planning, like scenario modeling usually triggered from external drivers. So what I see most traditional planning, they really inward focus. What does it mean? They plan their own process development, how they think internally, change processes or improve production or services, and what outcomes will bring to the revenue stream or cost centers or anything else. But when I see companies start to introduce scenario modeling into their life, they start looking more and more to external drivers, like what you mentioned, financial externalities like GDP growth or credit ratings, or what you mentioned, just like simply news with the generative AI, feeding, for example, Twitter feeds and get sentiments about the market changes. And these triggers internal scenario modeling cases in the company, and that start the process like, let's do a scenario because something changed.
Yeah. And I think that's the key here to really understand. It's not necessarily about something technical. It's more about a thinking change that you have in your steering to really look outside and think about what else could happen than just the standard Lego house that I'm just trying to build. To sum up, what did we see so far? Why it makes sense to look at scenario modeling as a potential value add in steering. There is an increased demand on the finance function. You need to be able to answer questions faster and faster. The political situation is pretty unstable. We live in a fast-paced world, and basically all month or 2 months, something new happens that you need to react to. I think the example that Jolt mentioned about the R&D department shows that flexibility and efficiency is actually key. And it can really help you, right? And also the example we talked about in Corona times, the explicit consideration of negative scenarios and negative thinking is also something very helpful. So now we've talked about the why. Let's move into the how. So how can you actually establish a scenario modeling in your company and a tool, of course? What are success factors, Jolt?
I will be really trivial with few, but let's start. For example, you need a really good driver model, which I think still a lot of company is just in the making. Why? Because different department has their key drivers, but these need to be technically harmonized and understand and well established between all stakeholders of the company, because then you can steer and scenario model. Because if you have different value drivers and you start scenario model in different bases, that can lead really like lost trust quickly from the tool, because you will not model the words how holistically the company see it. And the second, I think, which is really important, a multidimensional model, which I think a lot of company has today, but there are the trick, the art to choose the right level, to not lose in the details, because then your tool can be poor performance, it's just number crunching, a lot of numbers in the tool. Or other hand, if you just choose too high level simulation, then you will lose the capability to really think clearly in different questions.
Okay, that's very true, but it's also very technical. So for the non-data experts here, can you give an example? What's a multidimensional model and what do you mean by not get lost in the details versus not being too high level?
Sure. So a multidimensional model is simply how you analyze your company performance. So every dimension of your analysis, just think like point of view, how you want to understand your performance. Like one can be the geographical structure of your business. The other could be your legal structure, like how you build your group, for example. One could be the time. easily, like you have months, quarters, years, etc. And one can be like the key figures itself, like how they build up a value driver tree from each other. And choosing the right level, I will bring up geographic dimension because I think that's the easiest to understand. Like, it can be happen, you build up your organization structure from cost centers, for example, which could be really broad and detailed. And maybe it's not the best idea to, if you have multi-presence in several country and you have thousands of cost centers, to model there. But for example, you have a level of granularity where you see you have countries or sub-regions in the country, and you will model there. And with that, you get the flexibility to still think in the scenarios locally in a region, but you don't have to spread it down to cost centers and lost in changing, because probably the details are frequently changes, like cost centers closed, open up, etc. So it's, I think, choose the right granularity. It's every time the hardest decisions where you draw the line, because that will be baked into the model.
Yeah, understood. And are there other things to mention, other success factors that you think are important? You've now mentioned the driver model, the multidimensional model that's very data heavy. Is there anything else you would find out?
As I mentioned, as our best practice came, start small. So land first with the idea and then start expand from a working idea, because that's help you build trust. And as I mentioned, this is more a cultural or mindset thing first in the companies. That's why you have to earn like champions first within the company and then expand there.
Yeah, I think that's very true. You're alluding to the change issue. And I think that's what we know from change management, right? If you want to have kind of something and build up something in a company, you need to convince certain people, opinion leaders, champions, you called it, right? Find people who promote what you want to do. Yeah. So they spread the word.
Yeah.
Else your idea just might get lost. How comes you didn't mention any technical success factors? You're a technician.
Yeah, I know, but I prefer to say technology or the tool what you choose is just 20% of the success, and the 80% will come like non-tangible or non-technical success factors. So if we want to go towards the technology but still not mention any tool or technology, the data is key. So here the principle of garbage in, garbage out will be really true. So you need a clean data set and a unified data set to enable scenario modeling. And that's what I also see a lot of time. Most time what we spent, get trust in the data, which we will build on the scenario model. And second, which really important, and that's how you can win people to the project, how it's look and how what's the user experience of the scenario modeling tool. Usually these tools used by high level people within the company, and they don't like really technical or cumbersome process. I like to say you have to give the Apple experience if you want a good scenario tool.
I actually think that's so true. And I think what you said doesn't only fit to high level people, but I would actually say to everybody. I mean, who likes to use something which is not usable? And I feel a lot of professional software, unfortunately, is still overlooking the point a lot. And I get why, right? It's more, it probably helps you more in sales to say, look, I also have this feature and can do this and can do this to get through some initial process you might have. But in the end, if you want people to use what you have built, there are two important factors, right? First, it needs to be useful. Yeah. Right? So it actually needs to solve a problem you have. But when it's useful, it doesn't mean you use it if it's not usable. Yeah. If it's a pain every morning you log in, people just won't use it. And I think that's very important. So I think this usability aspect is key. Do you have anything else, any success factor you want to mention?
Yeah, and I think the last, like, and it's again not technology, but focus not just on the implementation. I see a lot of time, like, companies think like it's just a project, and when we deliver the project and we have the tool, we're done. But that's the hard part comes, I think, because you need to establish within the company the use of the tool. So you have to like make it day-to-day business and make the people use it. So you have to have best practices, you have to have processes, automations, which help the people not think this is just another burden on my traditional planning processes, but actually it's something which gives me additional value.
Yeah, I agree, right? And there we are with usefulness again. And I think if I do that, it's useful to me. And I agree, this cultural change is key. We already said it's important. Have the buy-in from the leaders. Start small, show values, get promoters, make it useful and usable. And I think that are very important lessons if you want to start such a journey. And there are points where you can just plug it in, right? Think about your management meetings that you have on a monthly cadence where you just say, okay, now we spend 10 minutes actually looking at scenarios. Yeah. Maybe you establish it with one business unit first and see how it goes, right? Experiment a bit and try to get the thinking bit by bit into the way people work. I don't think a big bang is the solution here. It works really the way that you start small and start more experimental to get your promoters out there. Now we've talked about the why in the departments. We've talked about the how. We've talked about culture and the change side of things. Now, let's think about how to actually do and model a scenario, because we haven't talked about this, Joel. Let's imagine the political situation worsens. Interest rates further hike up, and due to political situation, the management now wants to evaluate and repatriate parts of the supply chain. I think that's a complex but reasonable business scenario that people actually wonder, right? Shall I move back my factory from X, I don't know, to location Y because it's more safe? How would you go about modeling a situation like that?
Simply divide and conquer. So that's a really good principle. So you will break down the complex scenario into events and actions, which will be react to the event's outcome. And for example, in your case, you can split it up into, for example, three events. You have build down of production or supply chain in one hand. And then on the second event, you will simply de-invest in your current place of production, for example, if it's a production company. So you will use a few key figures, volumes in the production or headcounts in your HR plan, and some like financial impacts, what you will model in your P&L, maybe directly, just to make it simple. And that will be your build down. And then you will have a third event where you will build up somewhere. As you mentioned, you want to insource it somewhere in your original location. So there you will build up the same figures. You will have headcount build up. You will have investment. You will have a small CapEx plan to build the new plants, for example. And then you have three events. And then these three events you quickly can copy and iterate with different sentiment, like what happened if I do it quickly, I do it slowly, or build up in an average pace, and suddenly you have nine different scenario build up from these three small event, and then you have start judging and recombining them, which fits your futurescape.
Mm. And I say, to be fair, that sounds good, but it also sounds a bit easy. What do you tell critics, that people then that claim, an approach like this anyway doesn't lead to correct results, it's very superficial, the world stays unpredictable, right? So it's actually a waste of time and money.
Then I will answer with Peter Horvath, answers what I get from him on one of the company events when I worked for Horvath. He told me the plan's not for telling the future, because if we would do that, then I wouldn't work, because then I just simply earn a lot of money. So plans, just make it straight, plans for force the management or let the management think about different futures, and then make them think about how to react and what consequences of that different plan, because then you are prepared for different changes.
Yeah, I agree. And what you mentioned recalls me of my personal experience I had during Corona, because luckily our own company, we already had a plan drawn up for an unfortunate business scenario, which was elaborated, I think, 1 or 2 years before Corona, and not in the context, obviously, of Corona. And just having that in the drawer and being able to just pull it out and react on it, it was worth gold, because you didn't need to discuss anymore about the how to make the plan, right? You could just say, okay, how bad is it? In which scenario are we? And you had a very solid base and measures defined already on what to do. And I think only that thinking is worth such a lot if you get suddenly into stormy waters. Now, let's say it all works, right? We looked at the finance department. Why should they put or invest in scenario modeling? We looked into how to build, what are success factors in a technical solution? We looked at culture change, and we looked at how to model a scenario. Now, let's say we want to really incorporate that into our performance management. Joel, do you have any good examples here of your experience that you could mention how to do that?
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised how creative people, when they get a tool which enables them to do things what they wouldn't do before. And one of our German clients now start to introduce scenario modeling in their quarterly forecast process. And they technically came up with an idea like what would be happen if we wouldn't just do a forecast, but we do a scenario modeling of forecast where they have a V-shaped process. When top down, they technically retarget the budget and they came up with, based on the last 3 months events, how it's changed. And then bottom up, planners can react to that, like how I can achieve, how I can adapt to the new circumstances. And that's how technically they revolutionized their quarterly forecast with it.
That's nice. And that sounds really interactive. And also while doing that, you take a bit the political components out of the forecast because you're talking scenarios, you're talking measures, you're not like only arguing about the figures.
Yeah.
And I think that's worth a lot. If I recall another example, I think one client that also succeeded to set the scenario modeling up in this agile way was actually the project we worked together on, where we had go, no-go decisions every 4 weeks. So if the tool or the way of thinking we wanted to introduce didn't prove valuable, they would simply stop it. Because in that sense, it's not an essential thing to have in the process. So they took the liberty to do that. In the end, it was successful. And they used the tool and the thinking to model a lot of scenarios and to also do their own risk and solvency assessment. It was an insurance company that insurance actually have to do. Oh, I think that's another very nice scenario. So, Jolt, if a listener is now eager to start, do you have any tips on how to best start?
I think how we mentioned the groundwork is really important. So how you prepare for the change process. So I think first internally interview the stakeholders and do a roadmap, like how you want to achieve and how you imagine the change process, which will bring scenario modeling into the whole company. And then you should find not just a good implementation partner, but I also think a good consultant partner like Horvath. And I don't want to speak home, but really I see the enormous task, what should be done as a groundwork. And it's good to have somebody to help you who actually already successfully introduced scenario modeling elsewhere. And that experience can help a lot to make you successful as well in your change. And also, this transformation process, you need to prepare how to bring it to the day-to-day business, because that will be the key success factor and not just wasting money to implement something complex.
Yeah. And it's again interesting to see that you don't mention any kind of typical project pitfalls on a technical side or on the functional concept side, but really you mentioned start with a change roadmap. And I think that's also a very important thing to take away from, let's say, the whole introduction of a new method into your company, right? That's very important. Are there any things you would, let's say, actually say to avoid? So the other question, right? What you shouldn't do?
Yeah, now I will list some usual pitfalls of projects. Like try to enable your subject matter expert. What does it mean? Like I see still in projects like the day-to-day business, it's really demanding to run your usual processes. And I totally understand that you have to run your company during the change. But that's you can help if you, for example, hire part-times or externals to help enable the subject matter experts, because you really need them. Because scenario modeling, technically, you will go deeper understanding your company. And that's also, I think, a really good benefit, what not a lot of people not think about. When you introduce scenario modeling, you will get better understanding of your processes, because you need this driver model review, the multidimensional model review, and this will help and immediately contribute back to better understanding what you do and how you do it. And also scoping is key. So as you mentioned, don't try to do it in big one push, because that's usually I see as a biggest contribution to fail or have really bad starting experience. And that's not help build trust, but they destroy the trust in the process. And the communication, that will be really important. If you do something in the garage and nobody know it and you just like come out like, ta-da, that will not work.
Although we have seen a lot of successful businesses that started in a garage, but probably their ta-dam was also a bit different.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jolt. I think that was really interesting. And to sum up, how important is all that? I wouldn't say that those who don't invest into any kind of scenario-based performance management solution won't survive, right? That's probably too far to say. But definitely those who do will have a competitive advantage in nowadays fast-paced world. And if you think about the application of scenario modeling in combination with the generative AI tool that we mentioned during the podcast, I think that's really next-level performance management. And that ultimately will lead to making better decisions. And that's what it's all about in performance management, right? Helping to make good decisions, better decisions in a more and more complex world. Jolt, what's your opinion?
I think, you will get at the end better adaption capability. But I also would mention, like, to use a tool like this and create a tool like this, you will learn a lot from yourself. And that's already, I think, added value to the process. And that will benefit you to make you a better decision at the end. So not just see it as a future capability, but also during the learning process, you will get more.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you very much for that insight and also in total for your contribution to that podcast. It was very nice having you here, Jolt. And I'm looking forward very much to have you either in the next project again or in the second episode of this podcast.
Thank you and see you next time.
These were exciting insights into how companies can better adapt and prepare for crisis, interrupted supply chains, or declining sales. Maybe not quite a crystal ball, but a very solid way to respond to our modern, fast-paced world in performance management. Thank you very much for listening.